Hello there, this is VK3OTN, the official station of the Radio Amateur Alzheimer's Club of Australia, with the monthly news broadcast for members and friends of the club for March 2025. This month, instead of the usual broadcast, we will offer an historical broadcast from years past. The usual news and information will be broadcast next month. I'm Andrew, the VK3 Charlie Alpha Hotel. I have broadcast files going back as far as 2001. Many of the older files aren't the greatest as far as technical quality goes, archived in either Real Audio or Windows Media Audio format. These produced a smaller file size back in the days when the leading edge technology was dial-up internet. Remember that? This month we have an original broadcast from September 2002. Details and when to hear these news and information broadcasts are available at the club website, www.raotc.org.au. The VK3OTN is available on a wide range of radio platforms, HF, VHF and UHF, 2-metre repeaters, amateur television, DMR, that is digital mobile radio, and D-Star. These news broadcasts are available for download for up to 6 months, just in case you miss the original news broadcast from the RAOTC website. If you'd like to contact the club, then why not send us an email, raotc@raotc.org.au. I hope you enjoy this month's broadcast.
Hi there. This is Alan Global and Associated Relay Stations of VK3AMD is VK3OTN, the call sign of the Radio Amateur Alzheimer's Club of Australia, Incorporated. As we informed our members in our August transmission, we have now become an incorporated body as from early in July. Since then, we've been investigating the matter of third-party liability insurance, and have reason to believe that this can be arranged on acceptable cost because of our affiliation with the WIA. Right now, we are waiting on information from the insurance broker involved. And our magazine, OTN. The material for the September issue of OTN is in the printer's hands, and we should have it by the end of this week, and then hopefully it will be in the posted for you a few days later. As explained last month, Bill Roper, VK3BR, did the editing at the request of Stuart Day, VK3ASD, who was in the process of moving house. We know that members enjoy the broadcast and the magazine. Both are only possible if members send in material to use. We have 3 more broadcasts before Christmas and another magazine to produce in March, and quite frankly, we don't have enough material to do all those jobs. So please, let's hear from you. Handwritten, typewritten, email or fax. We need your input anyway. So thanks very much. Look forward to hearing from you with material for those important parts of our operation. This is VK3OTN. Here in Melbourne, we'll meet for lunch at the Bentley Club on Tuesday, September the 17th. Members are invited to bring interested friends along, but don't forget that the Secretary, Arthur Evan, needs to have notice of your intention to attend, so we can give the Bentley Club a firm detail of the numbers of specially selected meals to be prepared. The meal will be 3 very attractive courses, including liquid refreshments, and you'll be pleased to know that the cost of members is the same as on previous 2 occasions of $27.50 all in. The speaker will be Mr. Steve Mason, who will provide a very interesting talk on the top secret activities of the Australian Army Signal Special Wireless Group in the Middle East and later Australia and the Pacific. Steve is the long-time editor of the Special Wireless Association's magazine, Inc. Emma Inc. Members of clubs other than our own are very welcome to come along on the day, provided you let us know of your intention by contacting our Secretary, Arthur Evans, VK3VQ, who is located at 3/237 Bluff Road, Sandringham, 3191. You'll find him in the call book. His telephone number is 9598 4262. This is VK3OTN. in West Australia, the usual luncheon group will meet tomorrow week, Tuesday the 10th, and they're looking forward to a good attendance. Today's broadcast of VK6 will be retransmitted on the WIA repeater network by courtesy of the VK6 division of the WIA, for which cooperation we are very grateful. In South Australia, Ray Dean, 5RK, advises that the annual luncheon will be held on Thursday, the 24th of October, 2002, at 12 noon for lunch at 12:30, and you're advised to please bring along your seniors card. The venue is the Marion Hotel in Marion Road, Mitchell Park, and you need to book by RSVP to one of the following committee members before the 20th of this month. Before the 20th of October. We're getting good notice. Mac Townsend, VK5HT, on phone 8295-2209, Secretary Ray Dean, 5RK, phone 8271-5401, Assistant Secretary Ron Coote, VK5RV, phone 8296-6681, and the public transport bus 243 to stop 24 will get you there. And that's from Ray Dean, VK5RK. This is VK3OGN for the Radio Amateurs Alzheimer's Club Australia. Today we welcome to membership Mr. Max Morris, VK3GMM, who becomes Associate Member number 1265. And I know that Stephen Phillips, VK3JY, has sent in his application for an Associate Membership, but his number hasn't been allocated yet, but it's being processed. This is VK3OTN. John Bennett, VK3ZA, Bleak VK2SIG, was a long-time friend and compatriot of the late Alan Vague, VK3AGV, and he's written about Alan as follows. Alan George Vague, VK3AGV, became a silent key on Wednesday, July the 24th, this year, aged 97. With his passing, Australia has lost an extraordinary contributor to radio communication, a brave, fearless and modest former Army officer and perfect gentleman. I have lost a dear friend and compatriot and mentor whose help and friendship during 52 years association is difficult to express in words. Each and every person I had the good fortune to know or come in contact with Alan was the richer for having done so. Alan was born in Bairnsdale, Victoria, in March 1905, the second eldest of six children, three boys and three girls. His father managed the local butter factory and later moved to Melbourne to the butter company's head office. He attended the Middle Park School and joined the Royal Australian Navy in 1919 as a cadet telegraphist at the age of 14 years and 6 months. Technically, Australia was still at war, although hostilities ceased in November 1918. Alan was trained at the Communications School at the RAN Depot, HMAS Cerberus, on Western Port Bay in Victoria. Following his training, he was variously watchkeeping telegraphist at Cerberus and the Garden Island Naval Base in Sydney Harbour. The base was still an island at that time, and the linking causeway was built some years later. He also served at Naval Staff Office in Port Melbourne, which later was called HMAS Lonsdale, and aboard the survey ship Geranium. Alan grew up with marine radio as it grew. He operated and worked with the earliest of spark transmitters through to the latest types before the introduction of valve equipment, which he first saw at the age of 16 at Cerberus. He often said that telegraphy was in his blood. Two of his uncles were both surveyors and telegraphists in the team which constructed the famed overland telegraph from Darwin to Adelaide in the 1870-1872 years. And an aunt of Alan's was the last female telegraphist to serve in the post office telegraph service, retiring in the 1920s. In the early 1920s, the Navy was winding down and scrapping ships following the Great War. The future for Alan was not bright, as numbers of service personnel were also being reduced, and Alan applied to leave the Navy, having decided to become a merchant marine ship radio officer. Toward that end, he completed his first class radio operator certificate and also qualified as an electrician. This is VK3OTN. After leaving the Navy, Owen did a lot of electrical work in Australia before moving to New Guinea to join the Bilolo Gold Virgin Company, where, as an electrician, he installed a new 650 kVA hydroelectric power station using a Westinghouse Pelton wheel. Following that, he joined Amalgamated Wireless Australia Limited in charge of their coastal radio station network at Bilolo. The Bilolo station BLT functioned as a combined coast and aeronautical radio service. The aviation aspect handled mainly aircraft flying in machinery and personnel to the Huon Gulf goldfields, and the coast station handled shipping movements, weather information, public telegrams and freight information, although phone speech was used on occasions on the radio. Morse code was the preferred means of communication. During his time at VLT, Owen had many contacts with aviatrix Amelia Earhart during her round-the-world flight. He was also the last person to have contact with her after she left New Guinea to overfly the Pacific Ocean. Using CW, she told Owen she was descending from 7,500 feet to get below low cloud. That was her last message. Owen called and listened for her to no avail. No confirmed trace of her has ever been found, and just where she disappeared remains a mystery. The original equipment at Bilolo was hand-built, and Owen rebuilt it all, including the 5-kilowatt transmitter. He particularly used the ARRL handbook in his endeavours to improve the antenna systems to achieve better range, bearing in mind the station BLT was about 80 kilometres inland in a valley surrounded by mountains between 2,800 and 3,000 metres high. What a location. Using the amateur radio call sign VK9DM, Allen established contact with Ham, station VK3ZZ in Melbourne, who was a neighbour of his brother Desmond, a Royal Australian Navy engineer. Thus, Allen was able to maintain contact with his family in Australia. He often reminisced about these contacts. He would work no station other than VK3ZZ, much to the consternation of other hams around the world who were eager to have a rare contact with New Guinea. The reason Allen only worked VK3ZZ was because he fired up a 5,000-watt PLT transmitter to talk to his brother, and certainly didn't want to work anyone else with that power and have to lie to explain the nature of his ham equipment. Under Australian administration at that time, ham stations were limited to a power of 100 watts. In 1939, Owen joined the New Guinea Volunteer Rifles, an Army Citizen Force militia unit, and formed their signal section. Shortly after the Japanese entered the war in 1941, the baggage house at Bilolo was bombed and destroyed. BLT was also damaged. Allen and his wife and son were on leave in Australia at the time. Allen returned to New Guinea to the New Guinea Volunteer Rifles, which had been mobilised, and to BLT. His wife, who had been in New Guinea for 10 years, was not allowed to return. Lieutenant Allen Begg and his signalman trained by day and night, and meanwhile Allen kept BLT operational as well. As the Japanese advanced into New Guinea and the bombing increased, VLT was destroyed, and Allen and his signalers took to the jungle. They had virtually no army radio equipment and used whatever they could get their hands on. They salvaged what they could from VLT and got a few AWA, 3BA and 3BZ tele radios from plantations. This is VK3OTN. Allen had signals operators all over the territory, a few men scattered here and there, sending back information on Japanese troop and air movements, which was relayed to Australian Army headquarters in Port Moresby. Allen spent over 2 years living in native villages and in the jungle and moving from place to place, often hurriedly at night, to avoid capture. On several occasions, the Japanese were so close to his hiding place that he could see them and hear them talking. His unit still had little equipment. In one attempt to get more radios to run, the Army here dropped two complete radio stations to him. One parachute load slammed into a cliff face and the radio disintegrated into small fragments falling into the valley below. Excuse me. Alan often worked and sent radio messages from observation positions perilously close to the enemy. Once, lying in long grass while observing a ship unloading Japanese troops, equipment and a cargo of bombs and other stores, he saw an oil tanker sneaking into the Labu harbour at fast light. He sent a signal to Port Moresby, and at first light next morning, in came the bombers, and up she went, he said. Excuse me. Captain Bay, as he now was, moved from the jungle and villages back to Port Moresby to become the chief signals officer at headquarters New Guinea Force, for which he established the Army's main radio station. During this period, he took a signals detachment from Lae in New Guinea to Tulagi, the then capital of the Solomon Islands. Now, the first Australians there, as the American Marines were forcing the Japanese out of Guadalcanal in their push through the Pacific Islands. The station Allen established linked Tulagi with Port Moresby. Allen himself was badly affected by his time in the jungles of New Guinea and the privations that entailed. He used to suffer great pain for the rest of his life from tropical ulcers which could never be healed. Such was his strength of character and cheerful disposition that very few people ever knew of his suffering. After the war, Allen returned to AWA and to New Guinea together with his family, first to Port Moresby and then Lae, and finally to establish and operate a new coast station, BIJ, at Samurai, near the eastern tip of the island. In 1950, Allen joined the staff of AWA's Melbourne office in the engineering department of the late Bert Pringle. Also on that group were the late Alex Jeter, VK3BMS, and myself, John Bennett. From then on, we were very close friends, as we say in Australia, great mates. Allen, Alec and I worked together on many radio and communication projects of national significance, some of which were highly classified. We worked hard and often played hard, as mates do. About 25 years ago, 19 ex-AWA engineering staff from all over Australia got together to form a weekly radio network to stay in touch with each other. All of us were first-class commercial radio operators who also held amateur radio station licenses. By 2002, time had taken its toll. 17 had become silent keys. Alan and I were the last of the two of the original group. Some years ago, our AWA network was joined by Ron Collett, VK2LU, the former chief engineer of broadcasting station 2UW, with whom I once worked in Sydney. When Alan went into a hostel where he could not have his ham gear, he generously gave it to Jim Fez, the former marine manager of AWA in Melbourne. Jim, a long-time friend of Alan and myself, then took out the ham call sign V3CAN and joined our Wednesday morning sked on 40 metres. Jim Fez has been a tower of strength to Alan both before and since he went to the hostel and is a most welcome member of our little group, so we are now free. At his retirement function at AWA, Alan said, AWA is the most wonderful organisation outside the military. The atmosphere in the company had to be experienced to be understood. We were a group of highly specialised engineers, often working on our own and left to get on with the job. Engineering people were great people. Meeting such a lot of nice blokes was outstanding. And the greatest and most standing bloke of them all was Alan George Bagg. Farewell, true friend. And that was from John Bennett, VK3ZA, VK2SIG, the story about Alan Bagg. He was plagued for the rest of his life by reporters and other people trying to find out more about the mysterious disappearance of Amelia Earhart. This is VK3AMD and Associated Relay Stations is VK3ATN. And here we have a story from Jeff Woad, VK6AS, who was also a commercial radio operator. And here is his story. Oh, and by the way, of course, Alex Stewart, 3BMS, who was mentioned in the Alan Bagg story, as a member of this club and served for a short time as president before illness caused him to resign from that job. He passed away a couple of years ago. Back again to Jeff Wade, VK6AX. He says, pardon the cough, I joined SS Bactria, belonging to the Cunard Shipping Company, on the morning of the 1st of September 1949 in Liverpool. She was 2,407 tons gross, built in 1928 and powered by a triple expansion steam engine and a coal burner. It on occasions could get up to some 15 knots. The radio shack and my cabin were on the after end of the boat deck. A bit over 18 years old, I had just come off a nice new passenger ship as the third radio operator, officer, and while it seemed a bit of a come down, I was on my own as the ship's radio officer for the first time. The radio gear was also a bit different. The transmitters were a CW, ICW, Marconi 533534. It had two DETI valves in parallel as a three-point oscillator coupled directly to the antenna. Power came from a motor generator driven by 24 volts DC, producing 100 volts at 500 hertz, into a transformer and selenium rectifier to put 1,000 volts onto the plate. Output was about 100 watts. The accompanying receiver was a Marconi Type 730, quite a piece of gear. It covered 15 kHz to 20 MHz. It had four valves, all two valve W21 pentodes, a tuned RF, a detector, and an LF amplifier, and a separate oscillator for the reception of rugby on 16 kHz. There were 11 bands with 22 plug-in coils. To make it more exciting, the RF stage and the detector had separate tuning controls. Just in case all this high-tech didn't work, there was a crystal detector and real cat's whisker job. One saving grace was, when tuned away from the distress frequency of 500 kHz, you could go straight back to it with a flick and one switch. Wet their batteries powered it. There was a nice, new, shiny direction finder receiver and Marconi Lodestone Mark III, but this was in the chart room, a long way away from the shack. Last was an IMRC lifeboat radio. That was it, with no auto alarm to disturb my sleep, no radar or echo sounder to keep going either. Bliss. During the trip with the coverage on the GBZ 19.4 kHz, I didn't have to worry too much about ever missing the 4-hourly traffic lists or HF. Those IF signals never missed, day, night, or QRN. Those LF signals, I should have said, never missed, day, night, or QRN. We sailed to Liverpool at 1700, on the afternoon of the 1st of September. Flat's going crazy. It was a beautiful sunny day sailing out of the Mersey. I called up GLB and sent my GNTZ QTO GLB bound CNP, which was Casablanca. I received the QSL and started to tune into GBZ for the area broadcast on 19.4 kHz. As I spun the two dials, GBZ with 1 megawatt behind it fairly crashed through the old moving iron phones and fairly rattled my eardrums. I wasn't caught the same way twice. I can still feel the eardrums vibrating when I think about it. No AVC on that set. It was very pleasant sailing down south, nice long days with a fairly oily swell, and we arrived in Casablanca on the 7th of September and quickly unloaded our cargo of two diesel locomotives and left the same day for Gibraltar, which is ZDK. In Gibraltar, I managed to get ashore a few times, buy a decent camera, and after hearing some talk on the ship, get a load of cigarettes. I also had a few beers in a place with a girl saxophone jazz band, where they occasionally danced on the tables. An interesting old ship there was the seven-masted steel bark with Carl Vinnan. This is VK3ATN. We left Gibraltar on the 10th of September and arrived from Genoa, ICB, on the 14th. The customs came on board and bought their cigarettes, leaving me with more money than I thought possible, a direct profit of 100,000 lira, around 100 pounds at the time. Genoa greeted me with open arms, great place to spend money, although the 10,000 lira notes were damned nuisance on the trams. The beer was watery, but the Chianti was good. We left Genoa for Leghorn on the 18th of September, arriving the same day. While there, I was able to visit Pisa, some 40 miles away, and of course climb the Leaning Tower. There was still a lot of bomb damage around at the time. That's me on my kind of page. This is VK3ATN. Leaving Leghorn on the early morning of the 21st September, we arrived in Naples, which was IQH, next day. The pizzas and opera were good. I had my first pizza in a shell hole and a wall in the main drag. A visit to Pompeii got a little exciting when the train conductor wanted to pinch us for not having a ticket, and then have to pull the emergency brake to let us off. Compressed air belched out and blew the rubbish from the floor everywhere. Mount Vesuvius was also stewing slowly in the background. Leaving Naples on the 24th of September, we arrived in Palermo the next day, and my main memories of that were a massive amount of war damage. We departed Palermo on the 26th of September and arrived in Kalamata in southern Greece on the 28th of September and loaded their first post-war cargo of currants. If anything, the war damage was even worse. My main memory is drinking beer from a cut-down Naffy beer bottle and Maffro Daphne wine, also an introduction to Ouzo. Around this time, there was a big devaluation of the pound and to the US dollar. Our lira were devalued less than the drachma was, so that we got even more drachma for our lira, 240,000 to £1 at the time. Sounds a lot, doesn't it? Leaving Kalamata late on the 1st of October, I got a message from the skipper to send to the UK. I couldn't find anyone to QSP it for me, so waited until after 2200 hours, the end of my last watch. I called Land's End, GLD, on 375 kHz and got an instant answer and passed the message some 2,600 kilometres directly across Europe. We arrived in Catacalon on the 2nd October and again commenced loading their first post-war current crop. If it was possible, the shore was even more battered than that, but they must have received money from somewhere as they put on a fireworks display to celebrate. We responded by using up a lot of time-expired wartime pyrotechnics with marines, five-star flares and line-carrying rockets. It was quite spectacular. Leaving Catacalon on the 6th and arriving at Patras on the 7th of October, we loaded more currants, finally leaving there on the 9th of October, and a day later we discovered six Greek stowaways, but too late to turn back. On the 14th of October, we arrived back in Gibraltar again. The stowaways thought it would be a nice place to stay. The local place didn't agree, and there was quite a pitch battle at one time to combine them in the poop. We left the same day. There were gulls in the bay which made the ship quite lively. It was the first time I'd seen fiddles on the saloon tables. At around 1100 on the 17th October, I was in the chart room taking DF bearings on Cape Ushant. The skipper was standing alongside me plotting them. There was a bit of a strangled cry from the man in the starboard, in the wheelhouse above us, and we both looked up and through the porthole to see a large clan line vessel directly ahead, broadside to wind and sea, and flying out of control signals. The skipper shouted hard a starboard up the voice pipe and we turned out of harm's way, just in time. Minutes later, the other ship vanished into the spray and spewed behind us. We went back for the bearings. Arriving at Bristol on the 19th of October, the stowaways collected by the police and kept locked up. Ashore, I discovered that the lights were scrumpy, powerful stuff. Also, a night tour of the Mauritania Bar, quite a place with all the fittings from the old RMS Mauritania. We left Bristol into a cold, dirty night late on the 21st of October, and just before the end of my last watch, I received a distress call from a small ship that had struck a floating mine about 40 miles west, ahead of the very near Milford Haven. The tug got there quicker than we did. We arrived back in Liverpool in the early morning of the 21st October and anchored in the Mersey, down at the southern end of the docks. Unknown to anyone on board, four of the stowaways slipped over the side using wooden patch boards as flotation. Some 4 hours later, two remaining survivors were picked up miles up in the river near the mouth. That cold water must have been quite a shock to the system, quite a bit different from the Mediterranean. Whatever, we never saw them again. The police took off the two who had remained on board the same day when we moved into a dock and commenced unloading cargo. Me for home again. On the 28th, we moved to a coaling wharf. What a mucky business. The whole coal wagon was picked up and carried over the bunker hatch and then tipped in. On the 29th October, we departed Liverpool and arrived at Old Kilmarnock, Glasgow the next day. It was cold and wet, but the Scotch helped. We left there on the 22nd of November, arriving at Liverpool the next day, and paid off on the 4th of November 1949. I didn't know it at the time, but my next ship was waiting a bit further alongside, loading in the next dock. That was the SS Bactria in Palermo. So that's an interesting story about commercial operating. This is VK3AMD and associated radio stations, amateur stations, and VK3OTN for the Radio Amateur Old Timers Club. Just a bit. Many of us in shacks have one or more items branded MFJ. The March 2001 issue of CQ magazine has a short item about the company and its founder, Mr. Martin F. Jew, that's spelled J-U-E. His call sign is KF5FLU, and this item reads, it's headed an American success story. It's hard to write about MFJ, the company, without also writing about the man behind the initials, company founder and president, Mr. Martin F. Jew, a descendant of Chinese workers who came to America in the mid-1800s to build the Transcontinental Railroad. Jew's family settled in the Mississippi Delta, where his parents owned a grocery store. A beautiful drawing of the store by one of his relatives sits on an easel in his office. Martin was born in Vicksburg and came to Starkville in the early 1960s to earn his electrical engineering degree at Mississippi State University. He earned a master's degree at Georgia Tech in 1967, and after a few years off to design and build electronics for the military, he returned to MSU to work on his PhD. In 1972, working out of an apartment, he began building and selling amateur radio accessories. The business grew into MFJ Enterprises, which today occupies five buildings in four separate locations in Starkville, including the brand names Jill has added to the company through acquisition, Ameritron, Mirage, Vectronics, and most recently, Hygain. By the way, Martin never did finish his PhD. While it took him only three semesters to complete the coursework, his growing business, along with teaching electrical engineering at MSU, kept him from having the time to write his dissertation. Jew is very much a hands-on manager and engineer, in touch with every part of his business and proudest of his electronic innovations, such as the MFJ air coil roller inductor and a dual tuning capacitor, both used in his company's antenna tuners. Totally unpretentious, he drives a 10-year-old car with over 100,000 miles on it, and his office is small and cluttered with boxes. On the other hand, the walls are covered with bookshelves, housing a magnificent collection of old radios and electronics magazines. And then there's Jew's engineer's hideaway, a personal workbench behind a row of bookshelves where he can try out new ideas, work on projects, and that may turn into products, and briefly leave behind the day-to-day worries of business management. The manager in Martin gets most of the time these days, though, as his staff of engineers does most of the product development, and he puts his primary focus on running the business. From and Start is a one-product company in an apartment to a multi-million dollar company with four separate manufacturing facilities, MFJ and Mr. MFJ, who are unquestionably an American success story. I guess a lot of us know a bit about that because of the MFJ equipment. This is VK3ATN. This is for the Radio Amateur and Timeless Club in Australia, Incorporated. We invite interested amateurs to join the Radio Amateur and Timeless Club, Inc. There are two grades of membership. Full membership is available to those who have been licensed for 25 years or more. And associate membership is available to those who have been licensed for 10 years or more. Age does not enter into it. Subscriptions are currently $8 per annum, plus a joining fee of $5. These figures apply to both grades of membership. Members get two interesting magazines each year, one in March and one in September. Associate members become full members automatically when the 25-year date comes up. Associate members cannot hold office in the club. That's the only difference. If you would like to receive membership application form, please contact their secretary, Arthur Evans, VK3VQ, whose telephone number is 03-9598-4262, repeat, 9598-4262, or myself, Alan Doble, VK3AMD, telephone 03-9570-4610, 9570-4610, with both QTHR and any corporate. This is VK3ATN. Repartee has been described as the smart answer you didn't think of till it was too late. But some people do have the knack of quick thinking. Years ago, I belonged to a club in the Melbourne YMCA. We met for dinner each Monday evening and always had a very good speaker. At Easter each year, teams from each Australian branch of the YMCA met for competition in various capitals. There was sport and public speaking and music and all sorts of competitions. One of our dinners, one of our club members, a fellow named Darren Garnett, was known for a very loud and very raucous voice. And he couldn't help it, it was just that way. And after one of these competitions, Jim Gray, one of our members, stood up and recorded the results of the various events that had taken place over Easter. And he concluded by saying that we'd be glad to know that Darren Garnett had won the soprano solo. When the laughter died down, the very quiet voice of a fellow named Sid Powell was heard to say, "Darn, he couldn't sing soprano for nuts." The story's true, the names are real, but my three friends are no longer with us. And on that happy note, I'll leave you for Monday, October the 7th. This is Alan Doble, VK3AMD, and Associated Relay Stations as VK3OTN, the official call sign of the Radio Amateur Old Timers Club of Australia Incorporated. We're about to conclude our transmission for this month and hope you found it interesting. We'll be on the air again on Monday the 7th of October and Monday the 4th of November at the same times as today. Times and frequencies can be checked in the September issue of our club magazine, which will be in your hands in a week or so's time. Please stand by for the callback session on the frequency you've been listening to, and we hope to hear from quite a few of you. Thank you for listening, and 73.
That's all we have for you this month, and we hope you found something of interest. Thanks for being with us, and we hope you will join in the callbacks, where callbacks are taken. The next RAOTC news and information broadcast will take place on the first Monday of next month, on the same frequencies, and at the same times as today, with the exception of January. If you have missed all or part of this broadcast, or you just want to listen to it again, it is available for download from the RAOTC website. Simply go to www.raotc.org.au. Again, the website URL is www.raotc.org.au. On the right-hand side is the main menu. Click on VK3OTN Broadcasts, and you will be able to see the various times and frequencies of the VK3OTN transmissions by all of our volunteers, provided of course a volunteer is available. Down towards the bottom of the page is the current and previous 5 broadcasts for you to listen to. Sometimes the relay station is an automated broadcast, for example, a repeater, where no operator is available to take callbacks. Other times the volunteer operator suffers from very heavy local QIM, and callbacks are not always possible. Many operators need a small amount of time to switch from playing a recorded file to using a microphone. Please be mindful of this. This is VK3OTN signing clear from today's news and information session. 73 from the RAOTC broadcast team.